Hello, everyone, and welcome back once again to the Great Scott Podcast. I am joined by Body by Jake and fitness expert, Mr. Jake Steinfeld. How's it going, Jake?
What do you say, man? How you doing?
Now, I got to ask you first thing. Your last name is Steinfeld. Do you ever get confused with people asking if you're related to Jerry or not?
Oh my gosh, that's been going on for years. Jerry's a good guy. I've known him for a long time. And as a matter of fact, back in the day, I used to get a lot of his mail and he would get a lot of my mail. You know, back when you would send 8x10s to people for an autograph. And
Yeah.
I mean, I'd literally get to my house a couple of dozen a month. It's like, wait a second. I love Jerry, man, but he, you know, weighs 173 pounds soaking wet, man. I'm 225. How do they make that? What are you thinking about, man?
Did you sign it Jerry Seinfeld once or twice?
I sign it a lot more once or twice. Always very nice, you know. And by the way, it's just a nice thing to do. I'll tell you something. Talk about autographs, man. When I was a kid growing up, I was born in Brooklyn, New York, and raised in Baldwin, Strong Island. And my grandma, who was my biggest fan and my hero, took me to a Met game, man, back in the day. And for somehow, some reason, man, I got into the dugout after the game and got autographs from. I'm dating myself now, Mike, is you
Yeah.
know, with Cleon Jones and Tom Seaver, and I'll never forget. I had my mitt. I was probably in fourth or fifth grade, and I asked Jerry Grody, who at the time was the catcher for the Mets, to because everybody was signing my mitt, and I asked him for an autograph, and he kind of pushed me away. Now I'm 67 years old today. I never forgot that damn story. So when it comes to signing an autograph or somebody coming up in a restaurant and saying that those interesting things of you know. I hope I'm not bothering you. And, you know, I'm sitting with my wife and my kids. If everybody's nice, I've been very blessed. People have been so nice. So you shake your hand, you sign an autograph. And, you know, my moniker is Don't Quit, man. And it was a poem that I was given when I was cut from my eighth grade basketball team. We could talk about it a little bit later, but funny story. I always sign everything. If you came up to me in a restaurant, hey, Mike, what do you say, buddy? And I would sign your whatever, a shirt or a hat or a piece of paper. Hey, Mike, don't quit, Jake. Well, my wife and I were at a restaurant probably about 7 or 8 months ago, and the waiter comes up and says, hey, you know, the chef's a big fan. I said, oh, that's great, the food's unbelievable. He said, do you mind, would you sign something for him? I said, of course. So I took the menu and I signed whatever the fella's name was, and I wrote, Don't quit, Jake. And my wife and I, Tracy, went back to have a conversation. And you know when you're sitting down and you feel somebody behind you, man? And
Yeah.
I felt this presence, and I was eating, and I was like, Mike, I turned around, I was like, that's the dude with the chef's hat on, the whole thing. And he looked pale. And he kind of leans into me and he says, how'd you know I was quitting? I said, no. Wait. No. I signed everything. Don't quit. Don't quit. Like, don't quit. He goes, no, that's a sign, man. I'm not gonna quit. I said, no, please. But it was that was one of the good ones, man. So how you doing, Mike?
Good. I'm good. First off, I have to say congratulations. Your niece got married to some football quarterback named Josh Allen. He's supposed to be good.
Harry's supposed to be a good player. He's
Yeah.
supposed to be, and he's a good guy too, man. So God bless him and good luck. And it's nice to see when two good people get together.
Did I mention I live in Kansas City?
Hey now, hey, listen, you know what? I got a great story, man. So
Absolutely. Yeah.
Lamar Hunt became a friend of mine. I founded Major League Lacrosse.
You did, yep.
Know that or not, but I'm gonna cut way back. I'm gonna try to find the date in my mind, but it was let's just say it was when Joe Montana was the quarterback of the
Oh
Kansas City Chiefs. Okay, what was that? 90 what?
yeah. Early nine, I think 93,
It
92,
was
somewhere around there.
92, 93. Okay.
Yeah.
So my friend who was running NFL properties at the time, great guy named Frank Vuno, had asked me to get involved because of the work I was doing with kids. And I had done a program called NFL for future champions with Ronnie Lott, Warren Moon, and Howie Long. Matter of fact, I taught Howie, and if he's watching, I hope he's watching, I taught him how to read teleprompters. So I just want to make sure your audience knows that. I had this idea. And as an entrepreneur, I always have crazy ideas. Some are great, some are not so great, some work, some don't work. Thankfully, most worked, and the ones that didn't work out, they were big bombs. So it kind of evens things out sometimes. But I had this idea after going to, I love baseball games, and they had the seventh inning stretch. And at an NFL game, there was no real break in the action where the audience can kind of get together. Where at baseball games, they sing songs. At soccer matches, they sing songs. And I thought, what a great, could be a great concept. I'm going to pitch this idea, do like a seventh inning stretch in between the third and fourth quarters of an NFL game to get the whole crowd up, moving their bodies, and I'll come up with a bit. I pitch it to Frank. He says, I have an idea. Let's do it. We did it. We chose a game in Kansas City. The Kansas City Chiefs were playing the LA Rams. Okay. The Chiefs had Joe Montana is the quarterback. I believe the Chiefs were either 3-0 or 4-0 at the time. The Rams were, I think, 0-3 and 0-4. So it was a great setup. I got there early in the morning. I worked with the cheerleaders because it was a 90-second bit where we got everybody moving. And at the end of the bit, I had everybody yell touchdown, right? And
Yeah.
that was the bit. I got into the locker room. I met Joe, terrific guy. And afterwards, I was up in the owner's box. So I was talking to Lamar. And Clark was a young kid at the time, man.
Yeah.
And we're up there. It was a beautiful day. By the way, there's a big picture of me in the program. They're promote Body by Jake. There's a surprise coming up between the third and fourth quarter. Like, this was going to be big. And Lamar Hunt said to me, as I'll never forget, I was eating, I don't know, it's egg salad or something, man. And he goes, Jake, the only thing that could go wrong with this is if we're losing and it begins to rain. And I go, Lamar, what'd you say that for? What's wrong with you, Mike? Come on, right? So, cut to 20 seconds to go, the end of the third quarter. I'm in the tunnel. I'm mic'd up from NFL Films. I had my television network, so it had to be 93, because I launched my television network, Fit TV, fourth quarter 93. So this was either 93 or 94. Okay. So I have my Fit TV mic on. I have the stadium mic on, right? It's pouring. And your Chiefs, I'm saying it, your Chiefs are losing 17-0. And the guy standing next to me from NFL Properties looks at me and says, Jake, you don't have to go out there if you don't want to. And I said, what are you talking about? And the buzzer goes, the gun goes off, and I come rushing out. And it was actually a great moment because at the end, I have a photo or had a photo. Unfortunately, we could talk about my home burned down and the Palisades fire 6 months
Ooh.
ago, believe it or not. Lost everything. And one of those beautiful memos, mementos, was a great frame photograph at Arrowhead Stadium with everybody in their red and yellow slickers, raising their arms in the air, touchdown. But I'll never forget the moment. Lamar was a great guy. As a matter of fact, Lamar, when I launched Major League Lacrosse, we played our first summer showcase game, summer 2000, at Crew Stadium, which was the first MLS stadium. And it was a great moment. And he was a mentor to me, as Pat Bowlen was, and Art Modell, and guys like that who kind of mentored me in the sports business. But anyway, Mike, I'm going on a tangent
Oh
here.
no, no worries, no worries, no worries. I just wanted to ask you, will you be going to the stadium a lot more now that Josh is your nephew-in-law?
I don't, man. I got a lot going on, man. I'll be rooting from the side for sure.
Oh, sure.
Although Buffalo, New York, Buffalo has been a great market for me. You know, it's been a. I was just up there, wrapped up. I put fitness centers in elementary and middle schools around this great country of ours. I've been chair of the National Foundation for Governors Fitness Councils for the past 14 years, and each year I call governors cold and had a gift of three brand new $100,000 Don't Quit Fitness Centers. And it's been great. And I wrapped up in my home state of New York, not from Buffalo, but because of Major League Lacrosse, had an opportunity to visit some great spots. Buffalo, we played a summer showcase game at Bison Stadium. I did field conversions early on. Okay, I mean not the great late owner of the Oakland Raiders, man. Who didn't do a field conversion when the Raiders played, where the Oakland A's played, but I did field conversions on minor league baseball stadiums.
So, Jake, so I do want to talk about a much younger Jake Steinfeld. You were 13 years old whenever this whole fitness journey began for you because you were not quite as big as you are now, but you also had a stuttering problem, and I think it was your dad that got you the or got you started to lifting weights.
Yeah, man. I mean, I was an overweight kid. I had a bad stutter. My dad saw that I was quiet and shy, and I had a rough time at school because we're sitting here talking as adults now, but what you learn in life is everybody's got something. Everybody deals with something. My thing was, yeah, my weight, but also I had this stutter. Now, I knew how to read, but if anybody out there, fans of yours who listen to your show, I know lots of people do, a lot of people who stutter. And reading out loud is a very challenging thing to do. And I would try to memorize the paragraph. A teacher would say in third grade or fourth grade or fifth grade, we're going to take a paragraph and let's read out loud. Now, for a guy like you, okay, hey, no big deal. I get to read. For me, I was sweating like a farm animal, man, waiting, for my turn. And I tried to memorize the words. So I didn't stutter on them. But if it was a T or a t, 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 or a b, b, b or a d, 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 and once you go, you go. And your buddies start laughing, you get tighter, and the tighter you get, the worse it gets. And it was bad, man. Let's put it this way. Back in the day before cell phones, way before cell phones, you had to actually call for information and order a pizza. I couldn't even do. So, it was really difficult. And my dad bought me a set of weights at 13. It changed my life, man. I mean, not only did the weights build my body, but it built my confidence and self-esteem. And I started lifting and training. You start standing up a little bit straighter, you start feeling better about yourself, the girls start to recognize, and then it's this I could so call this upward spiral of success. Academics and fitness go hand in hand. I was never much of a student in school, but when I started working out, those weights and me, we got together, and there was something about it that changed my life, man. And there was something there that I said, this is what I want to do. And I want to go to California one day to become a bodybuilder. And I'm the oldest in my family. As I said, from Brooklyn, New York, and Baldwin, Strong Island. I went to college upstate New York, Cornell University.
Sure.
Yeah, right. Great school. I went to Cortland down the street. So, it's not a lot of people know Cortland, so I always have to lead by Cornell. And where it snowed every single day up there, not too conducive to walk around in your gold lamé posing trunks and 18 inches of snow. And I had this dream, like we all do. And every one of your listeners have a dream, had a dream. I hope continue to have dreams. And I said to myself, my mom used to call, well, every other day and check in on me and how's poli sci, how's English, and all this stuff. And I finally had enough courage to say, Ma, I'm going to go to California to become a bodybuilder. Silence on the phone, Mike. Herbie, pick up the phone and talk to your kid. I'm putting my head in the oven. And the bus ride from upstate New York to Baldwin, Long Island felt like from here to eternity. I sat down with my parents. They treated me as the as the kid that I was and said, "Look, go to LA, get it out of your system, come back home, you'll go back to college." And I'll never forget making that journey because, you know, there was this dream that was California when I was 17 years old, and I started reading all the muscle magazines, man. And this was the Mecca. And I got here, I tell the story when the dinosaurs still roam the earth. I mean, like Louis Ferrigno and Arnold Schwarzenegger and all these guys, all the big bodybuilders. And here I was. And I entered the Mr. Southern California contest in 1978. I got here summer 77, and I came in second place. Guy that beat me was on steroids. Now, nobody mentioned steroids. All the magazines said, eat 18 eggs and 24 chickens a day, and you too could become Mr. America. Well, Mike, I clucked a lot, but I didn't become Mr. America. And I had to make a decision. I was afraid to put a needle in my own buttissimo. That's a true story. If I wasn't afraid, the story might be different today. But I had to make a decision because, look, I left college. I left my family. I left friends. I had a girlfriend. Everybody said the same thing. You'll be back. You're nuts. You're not going to make it. How many times do you express a dream or an idea to a friend or somebody close to you and they kind of shoot it down? And a lot of times people do it not to be mean, but to kind of get you back to what they think is getting your right mind, brother. We don't want you to get hurt, right? And for me,
Absolutely.
it was so strong, this dream, that I didn't want to go back to New York a loser, and I stayed. And fortunately for me, right place, right time, right moment. An actress who was getting ready to do a Club Med commercial. This was 1980, 81, 80. I was sitting out by the pool and I was bouncing in a bar. I did the stunts for Lou Ferrigno on the TV show, The Incredible Hulk. Then I went to the studio tour. That was The Incredible Hulk. So there's a lot of green paint left over on my body half the time. And, I'm sitting out catching rays, and this girl comes up and says, "Hey, I'm Sandy." I say, "Hey, I'm Jake." And she said, "You know, I got to do this commercial. I need to wear a bikini. I like how you look, but I don't want to look like you." And I'm going, "Yeah, don't worry, you know." And and this was 1980, so at the time, you know, women were very intimidated by using weights. So she said, "Could you come up with a workout routine for me?" And I go, "Yeah, it was kind of weird, Mike. You know, this whole thing. I'm just catching rays, and she's hitting me with this with these questions." And I said, "Yeah, sure." She said, "Could you come to my boyfriend's house do the workout there?" And I go, "Okay." She goes, "How much?" I go, "How much what?" She goes, "How much is it going to cost?" I said, "Give me gas money for my 1977 white Camaro with Jake 77 on the license plate." I always kept a very low profile. Very important. So I improvised a workout, a 30-minute workout. Now, I love training. I've been training since I'm 13, but I've never been a gym rat. I go to the gym. My workouts have been, now they're 42 minutes. I'm a psycho, right? When I was bodybuilding, it was under an hour. So I would get into the gym and I wanted to work out and get out of the gym. Didn't hang around. And my perception was of this woman, she wanted to get in shape for this commercial she was doing. I didn't want to, you know, do too much. So I improvised with a broomstick, a towel, and a chair, right? Push-ups, pull-ups, and dips. And the towel was, you know, I would pull for towel pulls, tricep extensions, bicep curls, real simple exercises that you could do in a 30-minute workout. So you get your cardio and your muscular workout together, bang, you're done. I pump you up, make you feel good. Awesome. Got to the address in Beverly Hills. Walked up to the door. Now, if you weren't on the cover of Musclehead Digest, I don't know who you were, man. I mean, I'm 19 years old. Guy answered the door. Turns out to be Francis Ford Coppola.
Wow.
I just
Whoa.
looked at him and I thought, this dude could use a workout too. And I started training this gal who was dating not Francis, but this other guy there, who was staying at his house. They started going to parties and people started saying, what are you doing? This guy Jake comes to the house. He's got this 30-minute workout. He's pretty funny. He eats too much because they had a great fridge. I had no money and I used to sit down and there was chicken in the fridge. I'd sit right down, eggs weren't expensive then, but I still didn't have enough money to buy a dozen eggs and I would sit and make eggs. It was great. The one thing that I never did that changed everything for me is I never listed my phone number. And not knowing, I moved from my parents' house to upstate New York for 90 days to go to college. And then I retired. And then I'm in LA. And I never listed my number. And people started saying, you look great. What are you doing? Well, this guy comes to that. What's his number? I had this unlisted phone number. And one thing about Hollywood is if you're good and people want to get a hold of you and they can't, they seem to want you more. And it became this mystique of who is this guy? You got to get him. And on my little answering machine in my apartment in Studio City, California, I'm getting calls from Steven Spielberg and Harrison Ford and Priscilla Presley and Bette Midler, Warren Beatty, Barbra Streisand, Jane Fonda, all these people. And I got an opportunity not only to train them, but to get to know them in their homes, in their private spaces. And I throw the names around. Yeah, it sounds cool, but I learned the greatest lessons in life. These folks are no different than you and me. The only difference is they had a dream and they never quit on their dream, Mike. And they never took no for an answer. And that gave me all the incentive in the world to say to myself, now, wait a second, I might never direct ET2, but I'm going to have my own success in life. And I've been able to parlay that famous by association into videos, books, and television shows, and a dream to create a television network. Ted Turner gave me my start doing the fitness break on Cable News Network in 1981, which launched my career.
Yeah, I was going to say Ted did give you your career on TV.
Yeah, you sure did. You sure did. I was that's a great story too. I had just moved to Westwood. Moving on up, to that deluxe apartment in the sky, like the
The
Jeffersons.
Jeffersons, yep.
Come on, there's a little callback. Come on, Mike. Moving on up to the east
To the
side,
east side,
deluxe apartment
deluxe
in the
apartment
sky,
in the
right?
sky. Yeah.
Wheezy, George Jefferson,
Yes,
the best. I love that
and
show.
then the maid as well, Florence as
Well,
well.
that's it. I love that show. It was great. Anyway, so. So I am in my apartment in Westwood. There was an article that had just come out on me in People Magazine. Now, remember, People Magazine back then, I mean, that was it. If you were in People Magazine, that was, there was no Instagram, there was no TikTok, there was no social media. And there was an article that stated something to the effect of when Jake Barks, Spielberg, Presley, and Ford jump, right? And a story about how I trained these guys. And like every day, I would check my answer machine. And before I was leaving to go train people, there was a message on there from a guy named Ted Turner. And he had just had mentioned he had launched this cable news network, this news network, and he needed to make it more family friendly. And what I considered doing a fitness show for him. And I got to tell you, I was getting so many phone calls of people to train. First of all, I don't know who he was. I don't know what Cable News Network was. Westwood didn't have cable yet, just so you understand, right? This was 1980. So Westwood, California did not have cable. And if you can imagine. And I was on my way to the Playboy Mansion to train Hef and his girlfriend. And after the workout, I had mentioned, hey, do you know this guy, Ted Turner? And he says, matter of fact, I do. He's a great guy. And we started talking about an idea because I didn't want to do a TV show because at the time, what started to happen is the guys I were training were starting to put me in TV shows and movies. So I started some acting, right? And I really dug it. And I didn't want to become Jake LaLanne, as I expressed to a lot of people. But Hef and I started banging a couple of ideas around. I said, hey, what if this guy paid me a couple of bucks to promote me? And I could do like a commercial for exercise. And he says, yeah, keep talking. And I said, I have an idea. Could I use 12 Playmates? And he says, okay. And I asked Spielberg, could I use his house on Broad Beach, the beach? And he said, okay. Ted gave me 30 grand to do 200 1-minute vignettes, right? 60-second commercials. And I would do it just like I came to your house to train you with a broomstick, a towel, and a chair, and 2 cans of Mama's tomato paste. And every spot was one exercise. And I do this. Hey, gang, I'm Jacob Body by Jake, and here's your fitness tip of the day. Today, we're going to work the old buttissimo. And I've got my friends, Marilyn and Jennifer, behind me, right? And we're going to do 10 lunges. And I do 10 lunges. I say, hey, remember, stick to the fight when your hardest hit is when things seem worse that you must not quit. Don't quit. Have a great day. See you tomorrow. And those spots would come after or Flip Spiceland. I'm dating myself, but that's okay. If you remember the old cable news network, Flip Spiceland, who was a great guy, was the weatherman. And my spots would always come on after the weather. So he would throw to it. And the spots ran like 4 times a day in the States, but they ran 10, 12, 15 times an hour around the world, unbeknownst to me, right? And I just remember when I started to get letters from the Reagan White House stating here at Casablanca. Like Secret Service guys, people. I mean, like, yeah, when the Jake theme music comes on, everybody here at Casablanca stops what they're doing to see what your friends are wearing. We love you, Jake, but we like to see what your friends are wearing, and it really caught on, and it was really fun, and I was able to, parlay that success into television shows and television networks and, books and videos, the infomercial business, and I've been very blessed, man. It's been really awesome, really, really awesome. I've got a great wife, Tracy, married, top of the 37th year. I got 4 great
Hi,
kids.
Tracy. Hi.
I have four great kids as well. Morgan lives in London. Nick and Zach in New York, and my youngest guy, Luke, is making movies, directing out here in L.A.
Oh, now you had mentioned that you had gotten some roles, that you've done some acting, and you were in one of my favorite movies, which is one of the funniest films I think ever. You were a taxi cab driver, and I think you drove around Eddie Murphy and
Oh,
Arsenio
Sydney.
Hall. Yep.
Yep. Yeah, that was great.
Coming to America.
Coming to America, man. That movie, my friend John Landis directed it. And I had no idea the longevity that that movie would have. And wherever I go, I'm sure you'll beep this stuff out. But my opening line when Eddie and Arsenio come and they try to stop the cab, and I jump out and I yell, "You dumb fuck!" And then I take them to Queens. We were in the cab for 5 days, and shooting that at Kennedy Airport, at British Airways. And if you think about, if you think about the time, it was still the Concorde was still there. And I remember a moment where we were waiting for them to do it to get a shot together. And I'm sitting with Arsenio Hall when he got the phone call to take over the late night show from Joan Rivers on Fox. So you talk about all that kind of behind the scenes stuff. But Coming to America was dynamite, and I had a ball doing it. And it's, I as I said, man, I've been very blessed.
So I did want to ask you one final question, Jake. What advice do you give to someone who wants to get into the whole acting business side of things that like you've done?
You know what, man? If you got a dream and you believe in yourself, don't listen to the outside noise. You know something, I'll do this for you to wrap up. I talked earlier about this poem that I was given, right?
Yes.
When I was cut from my eighth grade basketball team, true story. I had just started working out, started feeling good about myself, went out for the basketball team, and I got cut. One of those devastating moments as a 14-year-old that you don't forget. A friend saw me, we were pretty down, and handed me this poem on a plaque, a perma plaque, if you remember those things.
Sure.
Handed it to me, and as I mentioned to you during this interview, I was not much of a student, and don't know why I kept that poem. Don't know why I even read that poem, but it stuck with me, and I kept it, and kept it through my entire life. Since I'm 14, I've kept it on a desk, right to the top left of my desk, wherever I was, wherever I went. And as I mentioned too, we unfortunately lost our home in the Palisades fire this past January 7th.
Right.
And when we were evacuating, we had about an hour to evacuate. And as the flames were coming, and the home that we lived in for 30 years, you know, what do you take, Mike? And I'm in my office, and I've taken some personal things, and I went to grab the poem. And I stopped putting in the duffel bag, and I said, "What am I doing, man? I can't take this now. If I take this now, I'm quitting on my house." And I put it back down. Unfortunately, my house burned down. I lost the poem, but it's in my head. And for you and the audience, I think this is important. If you close your eyes, if you're driving a car, listen to Mike right now. Open your eyes so you don't have to close them. But the poem, which has saved me throughout my career, which lends itself back to, if you want to be an actor, you want to be a businessman, you want to be a teacher, you know, the world lets you be what you make them believe you are. And this poem called "Don't Quit," which I trademarked those two words in 1981, believe it or not, goes like this: when things go wrong, as you sometimes will, when the road you're trudging seems all uphill, when the funds are low and the debts are high, and you want to smile but you have to sigh, when care is pressing you down a bit, rest if you must, but don't you quit. Life is queer with its twists and turns, as every one of us sometimes learns. And many a failure turns about when you might have won had you stuck it out. Don't give up, though the pace seems slow, you may succeed with another blow. Success is failure turned inside out, the silver tint of the clouds of doubt. And you never can tell how close you are. It may be near when it seems so far. So stick to the fight when your heart is hit. It's when things seem worst that you must not quit. Don't quit. Here you go,
Well,
Mike.
thank you.
Great to talk to you, brother.
Same here. Nice to meet you. Thank you so much for your time, buddy.
You got it.